Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport on day 11 of Wimbledon 2017. I'm Catherine Whittaker, I'm joined by David Law, and I'm joined by Simon Briggs, who is typing away at his laptop as we speak.
This is podcasting
on the run from Simon Briggs.
Yeah, apparently Neil Harmon was famous for commentating on the BBC while typing. I've never been able to master it, but maybe this is my dry run.
Can you confirm that rumour, David?
I can confirm that. And Simon, just to give you an idea, we're standing in a corridor just outside the press room here with Roger Federer having just beaten Thomas Berdych. He's going to face Marin Cilic in the final. Simon is standing here precariously balancing on his palm his laptop whilst typing left-handed and appearing on the Tennis Podcast. That is commitment.
It is. We're recording at 7:24pm. Simon needs to file at 8pm. And Roger Federer is due in press at 7:30pm. So we may have a brief Roger Federer interlude to this podcast. You won't hear that interlude. It'll be seamless for the listener, but we ourselves may have a recording interlude.
I'm not interrupting the Tennis Podcast for him.
Well, you might have no choice, David. Okay. Anyway, right. As David explained, we've seen Federer go through, we've seen Cilic go through, we've seen one four-set semi-final, we've seen one straight-set semi-final. In many ways, the straight-set semi-final, David, the more competitive, the more compelling.
Yeah, certainly the more compelling. I think just games style-wise, Query against Cilic is a bit samey throughout the match, isn't it?
John Invadel three times used the word enthralling on his commentary on BBC One.
Nice to
and
see
I sort of I blessed bless him for his attempts to engage the viewer.
Glass
but
half
I did
full
think it was thought it was a bit glass
well,
half
look,
full.
I mean, I listened to it. I didn't actually watch it on TV in terms of listening to the commentary. I listened to our colleagues on Five Live, which was an amazing lineup. We'd got Goran Ivanišević alongside Mats Wilander, alongside Anna Bocroft with Gigi Salmon and Vassos Alexander, and it was a thoroughly entertaining couple of hours because, you know, they didn't just concentrate on what was going on the court, they also talked around it. But in terms of a matchup, I don't know about you, Simon, I felt Federer against Berdych was a really, really good match. It was straight sets, but throughout it was competitive, highly competitive.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going back to my Glyndebourne comparison from earlier in the week and my piece about how, quoting Elizabeth Wilson and Love Game, about how people, when they watch Federer, I'm not sure they want him to be put in real peril. They're more almost coming for the performance. So what they want is a opponent who challenges him but doesn't really threaten him, and allows. I think in my piece I'm going to describe it as a bit like an illusionist's act, where you have the assistant and you weave your routine around them, and that's what Federer did. He wasn't 10 out of 10 Federer. I'm reckoning he's about 8.5 out of 10 Federer. It was very, very good. He showed signs of frustration at how well Berdych played, but overall there were some incredible shots.
Just to be clear, are you saying that Thomas Berdych is the person that gets sawn in half?
He's
by
Debbie
Roger
McGee.
Federer?
I'm afraid he is. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be a lady, does it, Catherine?
If you can think of a male example of that role ever played by somebody in history, then good luck to you. I think that's a wonderful comparison, actually, Simon, and I'm hoping he doesn't walk past us as I say this. I thought that match very much summed up Thomas Burdick. He played fantastically. He played about as well as he could. I don't think he could have done anything more. And it was just so far not good enough. There was never a moment where you really thought it was going to be good enough.
I'm not sure about that.
It exposed how good a tennis player he is and also how limited a tennis player he is.
Yes, but I was commentating on the second set of it and he was the better player. Throughout much of that set, he was the better player.
Yeah, he played great.
And
he
came up, and it's rare, I think, that you find Thomas Burdick against Roger Federer, or anybody against Roger Federer, who really identifies a game plan. Yes, we've had the hooked left-handed forehand for years of Nadal that has worked against Federer, but Burdick did it the other way. Right-handed, cross-court, forehands, blasting it into the forehand side of Federer, and Federer didn't like it, Simon.
Yeah, early on he looked wobbly on the wired forehand and I wondered if he might have a physical issue, because that's often the first shot that goes when a player has, you know, some kind of hip or leg or groin issue, because it's such a difficult base to hit the ball from. So I wondered a little bit about what condition he was in, but he did steady himself. He began, I think, to find the forehand up the line off the cross-court Burdick forehand and redirect play, and there was one or two half volleys that he hit after a return into that side which were just ridiculous. I mean,
yeah, there were. He was having to produce magic, wasn't he? Because the sort of standard Federer stuff wasn't getting the done in a regulation fashion, he was actually having to produce an illusionist's stardust.
He was going to the crazy points, the ones where he was threading the ball from an impossible position and making it work for him. And I was surprised he looked so frustrated at times, because it seemed to me that it was flowing. But I think that he felt that Burdick was close on his heels, and he felt that a mistake or two and he might go behind, and he probably knows that he doesn't want to be on court for too long, because ultimately he's the best player in the world, but he's not necessarily the most endurance isn't the right word, but he doesn't have that stability physically, maybe
durable.
Yeah, in the course of a 5-set match, not only would that put him in peril today, it would put him in peril on Sunday, so he was really worried about that, and he felt Burdick was close to pushing him that far.
Was it, Simon and David, a nervous Roger Federer today? Do nerves perhaps account for that 1.5 out of 10 that we're missing today? That's Roger Federer that's been announced.
Oh, it has. So should we just go and see that, and then we can tell everybody what he said.
Let's go. Well, the question I asked before we were so rudely interrupted there Federer was whether or not the great man was nervous for this match. Well, David Law managed to ask Roger Federer in the press conference just a few moments ago, and his answer was no. He wasn't nervous today. He said, yes, I still do get nervous. He said he specifically was nervous before his second round match against Dusan Lajovic, because he didn't know much about him and had never played him before, but said he wasn't nervous today before the match or during it. Do we believe him, David?
Well, I tend to take him at face value, because I don't think he's afraid to admit that he's nervous, but he looked nervous to me today, and I tried to get him to elaborate on how nerves manifest themselves on a match day, or, you know, and he sort of he alluded to his legs feeling a little bit different, and not his head. He said, not my head spinning, but, you know, I think a lot of options,
fogginess in it, yeah. His head is what it sounded like, sort of having lots of options and not having the clarity of thought.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because he seems to have such clarity of thought. You know, we compare him to Grigor Dimitrov, so similar in styles, and what's different between them out there, amongst other things. For me, the biggest difference is the clarity of thought, the decision making on the court. So it's interesting to think of Federer being foggy minded at all out there, but yeah. He says he wasn't today. He also, David, you also asked him about something that he brought up in his post match flash interview with the BBC. He took the opportunity to specifically give thanks for playing all of his matches on centre court for the tournament. He said what an honour and a privilege that was, and that he was very grateful for it. You asked whether he feels that's been an advantage to him, and also you asked him whether the likes of Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, did you mention Andy Murray? Because he didn't play on.
I just said those
one.
Two.
Those
I,
two.
I think I
whether
said
they would have any good reason to feel. Did you use the word miffed? What word did
I,
he use?
I said, if you were them, would you be disappointed?
Disappointed
that situation
and
had taken
he
place.
Was, a politician about it, wasn't he? He was a total politician. He didn't want to be drawn. He said...
Which you can understand.
He said, I'm extremely grateful for it, but it's not me that makes the decisions, which is always the cop-out that these players give. When I asked Agnieszka Radwańska how she felt about the scheduling, the fewer women's matches scheduled on centre, actually that was on day two of the tournament, I think, long before the whole furore broke out, she'd have said, it's not me that makes the decisions. I'm aware of that. I'm just asking what you think about them.
I don't write the headlines.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I'm not Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, but I've got opinions about what the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom's doing.
But you can understand.
You absolutely can understand. He doesn't want to get bogged down in that debate 2 days ahead of the final.
Had to ask, though, right?
You had to ask, exactly. Sometimes, they just need to be put on the spot.
Yeah. He did a great job. I mean, the thing with Federer, and I think that the one thing I would say that every press conference there is a feature of with Federer is he can turn pretty ordinary questions into really interesting answers. That is just a talent he has. And the only other one I can think of who's remotely like that at the very top of the game is Murray, on the men's side at least, in a different way. But he might cut you down with the initial part of the answer, but he will then turn it around into some thought that he's had.
Yeah.
That
you might have asked me a rubbish question, but I'm going to give you a decent answer.
Yeah, he almost tells you that, actually.
Yeah. Now then, what else is there to discuss? You've had a bit of a chat with a Croatian journalist who's flown in just in the last hour or so.
That's
as a result of Marin Cilic reaching the final.
Davor Buratsin, who is somebody that I met at my first ever tournament for the ATP back in 1998. My first tournament was as a communications manager in Split in Croatia. It's the first time I'd ever been to that part of the world. And he was there in the press room with another wonderful man called Nevin Baticevic. And they were just always my favourite journalists, the one from Croatia. I always got on with them famously. They were always sort of colluded and worked up stories together, and there was always a very nice atmosphere with them. Well, he, as you say, this is a time of really strained budgets in the media world, and it's very difficult for newspapers, particularly in a country like Croatia, to send and fly over their correspondents to cover these tournaments. Well, Marin Cilic is into the final, so Davor has flown in today, just an hour or two ago. He told me, I was asking him, what is it like in Croatia right now? What is the atmosphere around Cilic being in this final? Obviously, 16 years ago, it was Goran Ivanišević in the final, and he's been there a number of times. Davos said people are very interested, that it is on in the bars, and people are talking about Marin, and they like him, but they don't love him the way that they loved Goran. I mean, they don't love anybody the way they loved Goran. Goran was one of them in
that,
so many
I mean, that
ways.
Applies outside of Croatia.
It does.
Even,
it's no slight at all on Marin. He's polite to a fault. He's a really nice guy, and he's representing the country well, and people really do care about him winning, but it's different. And he said that he will have 6 pages of Sportski Novosti, the main sports newspaper in Croatia, to write a preview for this match on Sunday. So a lot of work for Davor to do, but yeah, the interest is there.
Crikey, how long's he got to do the 6 pages?
Couple of hours. So I said, so Davor, can you come on the show and talk to us and tell us all about it? He said, you're kidding me. I've got to go.
Did you tell him about Goran's potential debut on Strictly Come Dancing, which is a campaign that I feel is gathering ahead of steam? Haven't had your say on Twitter, either in our poll, which may now have closed, but it was pretty decisive in its verdict.
I think I made my
point.
Or
you can just tweet at BBC Strictly.
Yeah.
And
get on it.
Yeah, add your name to the growing numbers who are trying to make this happen. IBM's debate topic today, IBM Watson, the artificial intelligence platform. I'm only going to get to say that a couple
say
more
again.
Times
Go
this
on.
Tournament. Artificial intelligence platform. Their debate topic today is adaptability, which I think is quite pertinent, probably more pertinent than they realised when they chose it, because I think Thomas Burdick is the perfect example of someone whose plan A is great. It's not a Federer plan A, but it's a great plan A. He doesn't have plan B. What he lacks is the ability to adapt his game. I've heard this mentioned a few times in commentary this week, that what separates the top four out is their ability to mix things up, to adapt the variety in their game. I heard it levelled at Jo Konta yesterday. She's great. She's got a great game. She can't mix it up. She's only got plan A. I mean, if plan A isn't working, we did, as we saw yesterday against Venus, a little bit of panic set in. She did start darting her eyes up to the box as if to say, I don't know what to do here. It's not working. So it is a very important feature, right? It's something that distinguishes the 0.01%, I think, isn't it? And I just think possibly Sam Querrey as well, and in particular Thomas Burdick, a very good illustration of that feature of the game.
Yeah, and I'm always really wary as people flood out of the Roger Federer press conferences, which is why you can probably hear the hubbub in the background here.
The reason they're flooding out a bit later than us is they've probably stayed in for the French and Swiss-German portions. Yeah. Because when we leave after the English portion, he still has at least two languages to go, sometimes three. Yes. Sometimes he does a bit of regular German as well.
Yeah, just for fun.
Just for fun, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm always a bit wary of just saying Roger Federer because I think it can get a bit tiresome. Yes, I mean, you could say he's at the top of every category, which I think ultimately leads to the fact that why I believe he's the best male tennis player I've ever seen in my life. But the fact is that I can pinpoint a couple of examples throughout his career particularly that strike me. I remember the 04 final here. He was under the cosh from Andy Roddick. He was getting blasted off the court by Roddick, who was relentlessly piling on the pressure. And the rain came, and afterwards Federer decided, I'm going to serve and volley. I'm going to change the way I play. And he actually told us that afterwards, and it worked.
That's a fantastic example. I always remember Roddick on the court afterwards speaking to Sue Barker, practically in tears. He might even have been in tears, saying, I threw the kitchen sink at Roger today. Maybe next time I'm going to have to throw the bath at him too.
Yeah. I mean, another one that strikes me, and again interrupted by rain, was the 2012 final, when a little bit like Thomas Burdick, Andy Murray kept walloping cross-court forehands. He just started with Lendl, and I got the feeling that Lendl was saying, just go after your forehand every single time into his forehand corner. And it rattled Federer. He was on the back foot. I think he was a set, maybe even a breakdown in the second set. He was certainly a set down. And the rain came, and Federer changed the way he played and just took Murray's time away, took the initiative away. He does have so many options, and he knows how to use them. That's the beauty of it.
The Telegraph have looked at all the data that IBM Watson has thrown up, and they've decided that, and they've looked, to be fair, they've interpreted the question in a slightly broader sense than we have. They have deemed that Rafael Nadal is the best player at adapting and imposing his game, and what they're specifically focusing on is how he's generally adapted his game from a clay quarters game to become a two-time French Open champion. And it's interesting, I was watching the match between Thomas Burdick and Dominic Thiem, the fourth round match on Monday for BBC Radio, and he was trying, Dominic Thiem, he was trying to adapt his game, but it was echoes of Nadal 10 years ago. He hasn't figured it out yet. He was trying to force the issue, and every now and then he thought, oh, it's grass, maybe I should serve and volley. But it's clear he's a few years away from properly figuring it out. And it reminded me just how far Nadal came in just a few years.
How about this one? Arthur Ashe in his Wimbledon final against Jimmy Connors. Richard Evans, the great broadcaster, tells me that Arthur Ashe was known for his big serve and his big game and overpowering people. But it wasn't going to work against Connors, so he started just slowballing him, junking him, as they say. And it worked. He won in straight sets. You know, that is truly adaptable.
That's what Gilles Simon did against Novak Djokovic last year at the Australian Open, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that almost worked. Took him to five sets. That was when Djokovic was in his absolute pomp. Somebody else I should give a shout to that's just occurred to me, Jo Konta, in a very different sense. She has adapted everything about herself to make herself a top five player and a Grand Slam contender. That's sort of adapting in a different sense, but very much adapting to the rigours, the demands of the game, both mental and physical. If you want to have your say, it's hashtag what makes great. What do you think? Who do you think is the most adaptable player in the game, both in a broader sense and perhaps within a match? There's kind of two separate debates there to have your say in. Hashtag what makes great. If you want to check out the data, ibm.com/Wimbledon, and make sure you go to the Telegraph website as well. And you can also, while you're on the Telegraph website, have a look at what Simon Briggs has now scurried off into the press room to finish writing. Well, he is Well, he's 50 minutes past deadline, actually, now, because Roger Federer was a bit late to press. We were sat in there waiting for a while. Apparently, he was with guests.
Well.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Should we have a quick look ahead to the women's final?
Yeah.
Between Venus Williams and Garbiñe Muguruza, I had a quick chat with Gigi Salmon, friend of the podcast earlier, who'll be commentating on the final for Five Live. She can't pick between them. She thinks it's a 50-50. It's head says Muguruza, heart says Venus. You know, it's that impalpable thing of it just feeling like...
Do you remember what the head-to-head is?
The fairy tale of Venus is this unstoppable train.
I think I saw Muguruza play against Venus earlier this year, and I'm fairly sure that it was a Muguruza win.
Keep
on
talking,
that occasion.
David, on Googling.
I am, stop talking. But I feel really on the knife edge as well. I got the last one wrong. I said that Konta would beat Venus 52-48, and I still kind of feel that.
You said it in the guise of David Lloyd, though, on Victoria Derbyshire.
So, oh, yes. I did.
So yeah. You don't get the shtick.
So that wasn't me. I said shtick like
Michael Shtick there.
Yeah, I wonder what he's doing
that
today.
That was like anyway. Sort of subconscious Wimbledoniness.
There we are. I'm still going to go for Muguruza because I just think she's in really, really good form.
The head-to-head is 3-1 in favour of Venus Williams. They last met in Rome this year on clay and Muguruza won 6-2 in the third. They've never met on grass.
I feel really as though I'm walking on dangerous territory writing off Venus Williams just at the moment because she keeps on stepping up, doesn't she? And she's getting better throughout this tournament. But 6-1, 6-1 for Muguruza. I tell you what, I think we have a real chance of this being one of the great finals. If they both play to their best ability, we're going to get a Lindsay Davenport, Venus Williams type final.
I agree.
And I hope we do.
I'm going to sit on the fence as well and just predict a great final.
No, you're not. What are you going to go for as a win? I'm going for Muguruza.
Are you? I'll go for Venus then, because I really genuinely think it's a 50-50.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel particularly confident about that prediction, but...
I think the best person that we can hear from to provide a bit of colour ahead of the final is Mr. Chris Clary, who we talked about yesterday after Venus's victory over Joe Konta. And I found that chat we had with Simon Briggs really interesting about how difficult he found it to tell the Venus Williams story. Well, as you said at the time, Chris Clary is probably the journalist's best positioned to tell that story. And David has spoken to him and asked him, first of all, where this achievement, if she does achieve it tomorrow, would stand in the great achievements of Venus Williams.
I think the feeling is that it really would be the most powerful of all if she were to win it. It's hard to say that because of all the victories over the years, but considering where it is in her career, all she's been through since the last final here in 2009, I think the feeling in the family is that it would be something extraordinary.
Yeah, because really, early on, of course, Venus was the story. 20 years ago, reached her first Grand Slam final. Then Serena came along, but Venus was still mopping up five Wimbledon titles. But I don't know, I think most people thought her Grand Slam winning days would probably be behind her. She's now got another chance for one. What was your sense in the US? Did you feel you'd ever see this again?
No, I definitely did not. And that was a match in 2012 I remember very well on court three against Vesnina in the first round. Venus went out pretty quickly. And at that stage, she'd been struggling, and it just seemed like it was the end. It had that feeling of the end out there. And all the interviews afterward were kind of in that tone. And Venus did her press conference, and I won't never forget. She just said, life's holding me back right now, but I am a champion. I know I'm a champion. 2012, she and Serena go on, win the doubles there. And she didn't have a great couple years, but then she just was going through losses and fighting through, and then steadily she's rebuilt it. And you can see today, I mean, that's some of the best tennis she's played. I really believe that.
That is almost a microcosm, what you've just described, of this last couple of weeks. The statement, life is holding me back, because obviously she came into this tournament with this personal tragedy, the gentleman that died in the car accident that she was involved in. She broke down in her first press conference. I mean, the idea after that she could still be competitive and end up where she's been, I mean, I find that extraordinary.
Yeah, the family has developed. They had it probably from the beginning, but great mental strength, I think, and the ability to compartmentalize is something that Venus has always had in some respects, having to deal with distractions from her father, from her family, things from the outside, like the murder of her sister that happened pretty early on in her career. So a lot of things she's had to fight through, and I think the tennis court has been a place where she can express herself. She's a pretty self-contained person anyway in general. I think she goes through that. But I do think, David, that it helped a lot when the police in the United States came out with a statement early in the tournament. Didn't absolve her of blame, yet legally we don't know, but it made it clear that she entered the intersection where the accident took place, and it wasn't illegal what she did. And I could feel it within the family and the camp from talking to them throughout the last couple of weeks that was a real, reassuring moment for her and maybe lightened the load a bit.
Do you think she'll get through and win this?
You know, you have asked me these sorts of questions way too many times over the years. All I know is Venus is now the best story without a doubt available, because before it was Konta and Venus, both pretty good. I mean, Garbiñe Muguruza will have plenty more opportunities. I can't say how many more Wimbledon finals Venus will get to play in. So you got to hope that she puts on a good performance and plays. But it'll be tough. Garbiñe is at a high level.
And just finally, how big will this be in the U.S.? How interested is your editor at the New York Times in this story?
Tennis is not what it was. Wimbledon is still the biggest thing, I think, in terms of what interests people. But this goes beyond tennis. It goes beyond sport. The Williams sisters are real stars in the U.S., and anybody who's ever been a big sister or a big brother and seen that kind of rivalry going on, or also that kind of closeness, I think can relate to Venus's story. And I think there'll be a lot of people who will connect with it.
Well, he says it so well, doesn't he, Chris Clary? She transcends tennis, she transcends sport, and despite how incredible she is also relatable. And that is one of the most amazing things about her. Chris Clary there, speaking to David for BBC Radio 5 Live. A fantastic interview, really shedding a bit of light on what this would mean to Venus Williams. She looks, if you'll excuse the pun, so serene on court sometimes, doesn't she?
Yeah.
So serene. And it's not like she doesn't care. It's almost like she just seems kind of above it all. She's like this matriarch of the sport who wants to win but is kind of above winning or losing. And actually, she's not.
It's going to be a bit of a serene off, isn't it, this match? Because these two really do know how to walk the walk out there.
That is not a hashtag that's taking off anytime soon, David.
It is in my world.
Right then, so we've made our sort of predictions. We've got another 24 hours before we have to make predictions for the men's final.
Yep. And I really don't know on that yet.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up predicting Federer, but my broad thoughts at the moment are Federer needs to play his best.
Oh, I'm definitely sure of that.
Federer needs to play his best. He is going to be challenged more so than he has been in any match so far this tournament. But I will reserve the right to change my mind for another 24 hours, as will David Law. I think that's it for day 11. Two more of these things to go, the two big ones, finals days. Please do join us for the last two daily tennis podcasts of Wimbledon 2017. It's been such a pleasure doing them as someone absolutely
How late is he?
At the speed of light. I don't know where he's off to. He's ducked into the press conference room. You've missed Roger Federer, mate. Sorry.
Oh, listen, everybody, leave us a review on iTunes, won't you? Tell everybody about the tennis podcast. Hey, you can get T-shirts, you can get bags with the tennis podcast written on
them. Hey, I've got my T-shirt with me.
Have
We're going to do a photo.
All right.
Yeah,
then.
So head to our social media feeds if you want a little illustration of what our merch looks like. And one last plug, make sure you watch the Eurosport highlight show, 10 p.m. tonight. Covering the two men's semi-finals, looking ahead to the women's final. They're covering the men's and women's finals live over the weekend and doing a highlight show as well. So as great as the BBC coverage is, and each to their own, there is an alternative, everybody. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with Eurosport and The Telegraph, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.